Yud Aleph Nissan, Tuesday the 19th of April, Rabbi Jeremy Golka, 3 days in the Midbar.
Morning. Two questions I'd like to deal with this morning. The first question is a well-known question, and that is, how on earth can matzah symbolize avos and chemish at the same time? We begin the Seder with holach ma'anya, and we refer to the matzah as the bread of affliction, poor man's bread. That we can understand. Ibn Ezra writes that in his day, and relatively speaking that's not so long ago, they would give avodim, they would give them matzah to eat because it was poor man's food, it was cheap. It was easy to store, it was hard to digest, so therefore they wouldn't have to eat regularly. I can understand that it symbolizes avos. But the second aspect of it, the chayrus, is very difficult to understand. When we come to Pesach Matzah Morah, we say, Matzah zu shalo eichlim, and we refer to it, Hashanigla alem, this is chayrus. So how can it symbolize both? And the second question, which will address, and it's Hashem, is this really this big question that a lot of the Mefarshim grapple with? Very strange instruction HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to Moshe Rabbeinu. He tells Moshe to tell Paro, he says, we're going to go out for 3 days. And that's also very hard to understand. Surely there was no intention to only go for 3 days. The plan was to go forever, to go from Eretz Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael permanently. So these are the two issues, and I think one feeds into the other, and I think some very interesting things come out of all this. So the first question, how can it be that matzah symbolizes both? The famous question. I remember when one of the first weddings I went to of a peer of mine, he was a young man I was in school with, and it was the first time I'd seen this. That first of all, they had an official, it was a very, very fancy wedding, a very English wedding, and they had an official master of ceremonies. It wasn't, you know, this uncle or that uncle. It was an official fellow with a long red jacket. Maybe you've been to these weddings. And at one point in the proceedings, halfway through the wedding, the MC said, "Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to introduce the wedding cake." And at that moment, they opened the doors, and the chef, you know, wearing his shmona begodim, brought out this trolley. And that was a cake. That was a cake, and he announced, they gave the microphone to the chef, and the chef announced how many eggs were in the cake and how many kilograms of flour and sugar, and people were clapping. And that, now, why don't we do that? At some point during the Seder, we'll open the door, and this will be her moment of glory. She's worked so hard. On a trolley, we'll wheel out this amazing 7-layered cream cake, Kosher Pesach, and that symbolizes Geula. How can it be the matzah symbolizes both? So the answer that many of the Mefarshim give is this. Seder night is a journey. We begin this journey as Avodim. Of course, we're Avodim to Paro and Mitzrayim. And really, if you look at Mefarshim and others, look at Rabbi Tversky's Haggadah, for example, Paro is just, today, it's a euphemism for anything else which is an impediment to our Avodas Hashem. Whatever is impeding our Avodas Hashem, we're an ever to that. There's an addiction, there's some sort of holding us back in that area. And we should end the Seder as Avodim Takodish Baruch Hu. That is the journey. And to that extent, Matzah is the perfect symbol. Because we begin the Seder as Avodim, and we end the Seder as Avodim. But Avodim Takodish Baruch Hu, because that is true Chayrus. That's how the Mefarshim generally deal with this topic. That's why, by the way, we begin the Seder with basically an agenda for the evening. Many homes actually sing it, Kaddish, Urchatz. There are 15 stages. Now those 15 stages are really, whenever the number 15 always represents a journey to Ruchnius. For example, there are many examples, but you see 15... The number of steps in the Beis HaMikdash. Going up to the Azara, 15 represents an ascent to Kedusha, the 15 Shir HaMalos. There are 15, the Rabbeinu Bachai says, in Parshas Truma, that there are 15 syllables in the first pasuk in the Torah. It refers to the Yud and the He, the Shem Hashem. In fact, you know, when we say the pasuk, Hashiveinu Hashem Elecho v'noshuv achadish yomeinu kekeder. Have you ever thought about it? What are we referring to? When we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu, bring back the good old days. What are the good old days that we're referring to? We're referring to the times of Shlomo HaMelech. That was the high point of Jewish history. Shlomo HaMelech was 15 generations after Avram Avinu. It represents the waxing and the waning of the moon. When the moon is getting bigger and bigger, for our perception of it, by the night of Seder, it will be the 15th day, it will be the high point of the moon. That was the time of Shlomo HaMelech. That was almost like time of the Moshiach times, where there was peace, there was plenty, the nations were coming to the Beis HaMikdash to see this wondrous thing. The number 15 always represents this journey, this Aliyah in Ruchnius. And that really was the journey from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael. In fact, Eretz Yisrael, the Torah calls it Eretz Kanaan. The Mefarshim say that Kanaan is a lashon of hachno. Hachno means we're subjugating ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We machnia ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what true chayrus is. Ein ben chayrin el amisha oisik b'Torah means that if we machnia ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we are subservient to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that is true chayrus. So therefore, we begin the Seder as Avodim, and we end the Seder as Avodim. The only thing that changes is who is the Odoi. At the beginning it's Mitzrayim, or whatever, you know, fill in the box. And the end of the Seder is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore Matzah is the perfect symbol of that. Now with that, we'll be able to answer the second question in the fullness of time. The second question is a very perplexing issue. The Pasuk says in Shmos Perek Gimel, in Pasuk Tesvov, Vayoyme Oide Lekim El Moshe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, it's the third box on the sheet, Uvoso Ato V'ziknei Yisrael Al Melech Mitzrayim. You go with the Zekanim to Paro, V'amartem Eilov Hashem Elokeho Evrim Nikro Aleinu, V'atza Nelchono Derech Shleishes Yomim Bamidbo V'zovachto L'Hashem, sorry, V'nizbucho L'Hashem Elokeinu. Go and tell Paro that we're going out for 3 days. How could that be? It's wrong. Was that, surely was not the plan. What was going on? So there are four answers that I would like to present. The final answer, the fourth answer, I think we'll be able to use what we've spoken about till now as an introduction to that fourth and final answer. The first answer is a very straightforward answer given by the Or HaChaim. The Or HaChaim says an interesting idea. He says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates midah keneged midah. And therefore, since the Shibud began in a way of, in a very sort of deceitful way, the Mefarad, the Midrashim say that when it started, Paro himself, as it were, got involved. He sort of rolled his sleeves up, he got involved in this big national building project, and all of Mitzrayim did as well. And you see pictures, not that I make any comparables, but you see pictures, you know, David Cameron wearing a hard yellow hat on a building site, and he's rolling his sleeves up, and he's getting involved. What's he demonstrating? I'm one of you, we're one of the people. So Paro, yeah, he was exactly the same idea. The point is, though, the next day he wasn't there. And then slowly, slowly, the Mitzrayim, they weren't involved, and who was left? It was Klal Yisrael. That's how they were tripped into the Shibud. If that's the case, HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates midah keneged midah. Says the Or HaChaim, if you've got to punish them, you punish them not just for being Meshabed Klal Yisrael, but you've also got to punish them for the trickery in which he did so. And therefore, we'll do this. You tell them we're going out for 3 days. After 3 days, he thinks they're coming back. We sort of wave from afar and we carry on. We sort of dupe him as a form of punishment. It's midah keneged midah. That's how the Or HaChaim explains this question. The second answer is given by the Sefarno, and this needs some explanation. It's a fundamental issue, and the reason why I want to just spend a few minutes on it, because it's good conversation for one of the Yontif meals, perhaps Seder night, or the night of Seder is not just, the night of Seder is telling a story. It's telling Klal Yisrael's story, and it's the time to pass on Hashkofa, and really, you know, what we all believe in. And the next answer, I think, is one of the important hashkafic points that certainly our children and ourselves as well need to understand. one of the problems, if you like, in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim is how could it be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hardens Paro's heart? Surely, if he's taking away his Bechira, that deviates from the rules which HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up the world with. Bechira is an axiom of faith. Rabbi Bernstein used to quote Isaac Basheva Singer, who used to say that free will, we have to believe in free will, we have no choice in the matter. How could it be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hardens Paro's heart? So there are lots of answers to this. But there are two key answers. One answer is the answer that the Rambam gives in Meri Nevuchim. How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu harden Paro's heart? The Rambam says that Bechira, the ability to choose, is actually a gift. Because through that we earn our Olam Haba. The fact that we've got a choice, there's a temptation, we're sort of oscillating between good and bad, itself is a source for our meriting Olam Haba. However, if a person consistently abuses that gift can be taken away. So for example, Rabbi Hartman gives the following mashal. Imagine you get a delinquent, you get a young man who's a criminal, and one day he goes too far and he shoots his parents. He's dragged in front of the court, and before they throw the book at him and put him away for many years, the judge says to him, "Do you have anything to say in your defense? Are there any mitigating circumstances which I need to hear?" And the young man looks at the judge and says, "Please bear in mind that I'm an orphan. Bear in mind that I'm an orphan. I'm a yosem. You made yourself into an orphan. You can't use that as some sort of defense. Don't tell me where's Bechira. You abused Bechira. If a person repeatedly sinned and chose bad, then at some level, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could take it away." That's how the Rambam deals with that question. The Ramban and the Sefarno have a different approach. The Ramban and the Sefarno say this. It's a genius answer. They say that a person is judged according to his Nekudas HaBechira. Let me again explain this because it needs a bit of an introduction. I often ask the boys in school, it's a very interesting exercise to do. I present to them three scenarios and ask them a question at the end. Imagine the following three scenarios. Scenario number one. You get a fellow who's a secular Jew. He never had the privilege of a Jewish primary school education or secondary education, never went to yeshiva. He went at 7 years old for a few months to his local cheder, but after that he's sort of kicking and screaming, his parents agreed and they took him out. And he went off to university and he became a lawyer. He's now mid-30s and is a successful lawyer in the city. One day he goes out to have his lunch as he does every day and he frequents one of the stores near his office. There's a sandwich bar. There's also a shellfish bar. And he often goes there and buys a pot of prawns or something. One day, as he's going towards this to his regular haunt, he suddenly has a flashback. 30-odd years earlier, he's sitting in cheder, and he remembers the teacher saying something about kosher. And he remembers that the teacher said, "You're not allowed to eat shellfish." And he's standing there outside the shop thinking, well, should I go there or should I not go there? On one hand, it's kosher, I'm Jewish. I don't act Jewish, but I am Jewish. But on the other hand, I haven't kept anything all the years and years. I've been here for so long. And he's got this inner turmoil, this moral dilemma, and he's breaking out into a sweat. Do I go? Do I not go? And he decides he's gonna avoid the shellfish and he's going to go to the sandwich bar and he buys a cheese sandwich, which in his eyes is kosher. Fine. That's scenario number one. Scenario number two is, let's say, a young man, when I'm presenting it in school, a teenager, who is working hard the night before, up till late, doing his coursework, and then he sets his alarm for 7 o'clock the next morning. He knows he's got to be in basic, say 7:30. And at 7 o'clock that morning, suddenly the alarm goes off. He can't believe it's 7 o'clock already. He's exhausted. And the temptation to press the snooze button is huge. And he thinks to himself, listen, I've got to be at school 7:30. On the other hand, if I sleep for another 10, 20 minutes, I'll still catch Baruch Hu. And the quality of my davening after Baruch Hu will be so much enhanced. Because my kavona with that extra 20-minute shluf, etc., etc. And he decides, in a turmoil back and forth, I'm going to get out of bed. He gets out of bed and he makes shachris. Scenario number three, let's say, is a Rosh Hashiva. A Rosh Hashiva who's preparing his shir klali with tremendous preparation and depth and lomdus, and he's walking towards giving the shir. It's a 15-minute walk. And he's thinking about the shir, how he's best going to present it, which order he's going to use, what he's going to miss out, the final tweaking points of this shir. But then he remembers that that evening he's got an important appointment with a certain gvir, and he's thinking about that, how should I best present my pitch to him? And then he thinks, well, actually, look, I can think about that later. In the meantime, I've got shir klali, let's focus on that. But then on the other hand, if there's no gvir, there's no shir klali. And he's got this inner turmoil, what does he do? And he decides, okay, he controls his thoughts, I'm going to think about the shir, I'll come back to the gvir later. Fine. You've got three scenarios where each one of them have overcome their yetzer. The city lawyer who decides not to have shellfish, the base boy who gets out of bed, and the Rosh Hashiva who decides to focus on the shir klali. Who gets more schar? The city lawyer, the base boy, or the Rosh Hashiva? Who gets more schar?
The lawyer.
Why?
Why should there be who gets more? They all get
more difficult?
It's against his teva.
The base boy will tell me it's against his teva as well. Genuinely. Every day. Okay.
All right. Because he doesn't actually understand why it is that he shouldn't be eating the prawns.
So
he's just doing that purely as a.
Okay. The truth is that there isn't time. There isn't time, but this is an interesting discussion to have at your Yontov table. But the answer that the Rav Dessler gives is this. And it needs a whole shir in itself. But the answer, he says, is that all three. All three get equal schar. Graham got in there first, Mr. Shine. A person is judged according to his nekudas habechira. Now, that means the purpose of life is to try and make the right choices, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu will test each person at their level. And the point is to try and push your nekudas habechira forward to higher levels. And there's lots to say on this. There's two accounts in Shemayim. There's the effort and there's the actual Maisa Mitzvah, etc., etc. But that's the answer he gives. If that's the case, if a person is judged according to his nekudas habechira, according to his level, then says the Sforno, explains how HaKadosh Baruch Hu could harden Paro's heart. He's mechabed his heart because no normal person could endure the makas and could say, no, I'm not letting them go. He had to take away his bechira in order to give him bechira. In other words, he had to harden his heart in order to make the choice at his level of bechira. In other words, he's being pummeled with makkah after makkah after makkah. Any normal person would say, just go already. But in order to make it at his nukudas habechira, at his point of bechira, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to sort of retain equilibrium by hardening his heart in order that he can have bechira. So according to the Ramban and the Sephorno, it's not a kasha. He's hardening his heart in order to give him bechira so that he can make the choice at his level. That's how the Ramban and Sephorno explain that question. But using that, the Sefarno says, that's pshat in Derech Shleishis Yomim. How could it be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe to ask for 3 days? The answer is this, says the Sefarno. If he says to him, take them out forever, he'll just say no. That's like asking our city lawyer to put on tefillin every morning. That's not where he's holding. To ask him to go for half an hour, to go for a day, well, he can do that. That's the base boy saying to him, keep Shabbos, he keeps Shabbos. He's got to be judged at his Nekudas HaBechira. So therefore, specifically, we're going to ask for 3 days. And that's going to be a challenge to him at his point of free will. Not more, not less. So therefore, we dafka ask for 3 days. Because he can, and then, That's how the Sephora deals with that question. So we have so far two answers to our question. The first answer is the Rechaim, Midah Keneged Midah. The second answer is the Sephora, who says it's in order that the Parah was challenged at the point of his free will. Fine. There is a third answer that is attributed to Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, and Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky writes about it in MS Liakov. He says the following: how could HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe to ask Parah for 3 days? Says Rabbi Yaakov, Klal Yisrael were at the point of no return. They were descending, they were fast approaching the Shar HaNun, this 50th level of Tumah. That is the point, they're reaching the precipice, they're going to fall off the cliff. And they had 190 years to go. There's no way they're going to last another 190 years. So what did they do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, listen, they need a Shabbaton. They need a bit of Chizuk. This was the first ever Shabbaton. We're going to go out, wherever to the Normandy, we're going to go to wherever, and we'll go there for 3 days. Yeah, they'll go for 3 days.
Go back to Egypt.
They'll go for 3 days, they'll have a Shabbaton, and then, that will give them a tremendous chizuk in Emunah. That, with that enhanced chizuk, with that chizuk in Emunah, they will be able to cope with another 190 years of Shibbat. And he explains, Rabbi Yaakov's got a beautiful piece in MS Liakov, which explains all of this. But that's the nuts and bolts of the answer. That the 3 days, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said 3 days, it wasn't a trick at all. He said 3 days and he meant 3 days. That's all they needed. A 3 days, I'd love to know what actually was going to take place on the Shabbaton. But the plan was we should do it in schools and all the chinuches.
Yes, speakers.
But a 3 days, 3 days to go, no doubt Dudi would have arranged it. But there would have been 3 days, 3 days in the Midbar, and that was a Shabbaton to give tremendous chizuk that they could cope with the next 190 years. Very good. So that, with all of these answers, the point is that was always the plan A. Because what we're exploring is the request from Moshe Rabbeinu to Paro. Paro, it so happened, said no. And therefore, plan B was, well, okay, if that's the case, you say no, we're going to just go. Okay, but we're exploring the plan A. So the plan A was, we need a 3 days boost in the Midbar, you're not giving it? Okay, so I don't want Klal Yisrael to fall off the cliff, to go to Shar HaNun, we're therefore having a plan B. Plan B is we're going to just leave, we're going to go to Eretz Yisrael. Fine. That's the third answer. The final answer, the fourth answer, I saw in the writings of Rabbi Leff. A very, very beautiful answer. And that is really drawing on the answer we gave to our first question. How can Matzah symbolize Avdus and Cheres? The answer is, because the purpose of coming out of Mitzrayim to go to Eretz Yisrael is to make the journey to become Avodim Takodesh Baruch Hu. When we're going to Eretz Yisrael, you know, in benching, we refer to Eretz Yisrael as Eretz Toivo Rechovo. Yeah, have you ever thought about it? Eretz Toivo Rechovo, a broad, wide land. You know, you could run across from one border to the other border, from east to west. You could run in a few hours. It's... Rabbi Leff tells the story, a very interesting story, if you indulge in a few moments. He says, when he was a Rav in Miami in the 70s, and his Kehillah had certain timers against him, just one time. I mean, Baruch Hashem was a fantastic Rav and very successful. Their timer was that he wasn't Zionistic enough. And he said to them, listen, I'm born and bred in America, I've never been to Eretz Yisrael in my life. So how can you... So they decided, the committee of the shul in Miami decided, they're going to send him off to Eretz Yisrael. Him and his wife, he had a number of children, and they farmed the children out. They were all various members of the community, or family members looked after the kids, and him and his wife went to Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Leff always says, very proudly, he's been to Eretz Yisrael once as a tourist. Because he went there, he fell in love with Eretz Yisrael, he came back, handed in his notice, and the irony is that whilst he's built this successful moshav and has done tremendous things over the last several decades in Eretz Yisrael, the board is still in Miami, yeah, who are the committee members, but such is life. Anyway, on this pilot trip to Eretz Yisrael, it was just at the time, we've all, I'm sure, been on that road, where the road from Tel Aviv to Yerushalayim, Kvish Aleph, they were making it from one lane to two lanes. And they had just broadened the road, and Rabbi Leff was in a taxi going towards Yerushalayim. And the driver was very proud of this new big road, and he turns around to Rabbi Leff and he says, Tagidli, tell me, you've got roads like this in America? and Rabbi Leff says, he says, yes, we call them one-way streets. Yeah. And you compare that to the Verrazona Bridge, which I think is 16 lanes on each side. Yeah. And we call Eretz Israel Eretz Tova Rechova. It's wide. Mitzrayim, which is the prototype of Golus, that's Lashon Meitzah, Lashon constraint. Again, if you look at the map, Mitzrayim is huge, it's very broad, and we call it from Lashon Tzar, narrow. So what's the answer? The answer is we're referring to the Ruchnius dimension of Eretz Israel and of Mitzrayim. That it's the place where it's Eretz Tova Rechava from a Ruchnius type point of view. The neshama can breathe better over there. You can, you know, you see the boys, they came out from yeshiva. One boy who's a mishram, his future is in Eretz Yisrael. He says that it's happening over there. He's referring to a ruchnius point of view. Rabbi Harman always describes it, it's like watching a movie in black and white and in color. In Chutz La'aretz, you're watching it in black and white. In Eretz Yisrael, you're watching it in color. There's a certain dimension. It means the neshama is, okay. Now, the point is that the journey is from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael is to be machni ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to become proper avodim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the point of the journey. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at this point in the story, as it were, Perek Gimel Pasuk Yitches, he wanted to test whether Klal Yisrael were proper avodim or not. Are they ready to go to Eretz Yisrael? So how are we going to test them? Says Rabbi Leff as follows. That after 3 days, we're going to take them out. They're going to be in the midbar for 3 days. And after 3 days, we're going to say to them, right, it's now time to go back to Mitzrayim. If they turn around and say, what? We're free now. We're not going back to Mitzrayim. We're not listening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a sign that they have not yet ready. They are not yet Avdei Hashem. Because a proper Eved just listens to what his Odin says. And therefore, they'll have to go back to Mitzrayim, to the Kur HaBarza. Well, they're not ready yet. They haven't sort of been refined to come Avodim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu yet. But if they turn around and say, yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we'll do whatever you say. If you want us to go back to Mitzrayim, we don't understand it, we'll go back. Then that's a sign that they are proper Avdei Hashem, and then we go on to Eretz Yisrael. It was simply a test to ascertain whether they are Avodim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Are they ready yet to come out of Mitzrayim? And therefore, the intention was never to go for like a 3-day trip. The point was, it was a test to see whether they are avodim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It so happened that Paro said no. And therefore, they said, okay, plan B, like I said, is to go on to Eretz Yisrael. Fine. So either way, I think we have four very, very interesting approaches. The starting point was, how can matzah be a symbol of both avdus and cheirus? The answer is, because that's what cheirus is. Cheirus is being machnia ourselves, subjugating ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We start the Seder as Avodim, but we end the Seder as Avodim. We start the Seder as Avodim to Paro, or whatever it may be, and we end the Seder as Avodim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That, by the way, Rav Avram Gurvitz has an amazing verb. At the end of the Seder, the final thing we do, one of the final things, we sing these songs. The songs have so much depth to them. But Rav Avram says, on one very straightforward point, Echad Miyodea, Shnai Miyodea, what's that all about? Says Rav Avram, it's a test to see how successful the evening has been. If we end the evening, if we think one is this, two is that, three is that, our initial instinctive association tells us who we are. If you ask someone who is one and he tells you the name of a footballer, yeah, there's only one, yeah, then that shows you who he is. It's word association. You do one, your automatic instinctive association, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that tells you, that means you're ready, you've done it, you passed the test. That's what it's what. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe to ask Derech Shleishis Yomim? What's that all about? The Teretz is four answers. Number one, the Arachayim, it's Midah Keneged Midah. They tricked us in, we tricked them out. The second answer is that it's in order to give Paro Bechira. If you ask for any more, he'll just say no, it's not within his ability. If you ask for less, they'll too easy. 3 days was exactly where his Nekudas HaBechira was. That's how the Sephardim explains it. The third answer is Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. It was 3 days to give them a chizuk. They could last the next 190 years. And the fourth answer is Rabbi Leff. Rabbi Leff says that it's to test, are they avodim? After 3 days, if they say, no, we're not going, that you're not ready yet. You go back to Mitzrayim. If they say, yes, HaKadosh Baruch, whatever you want, now we're ready. We'll go on to Eretz Yisrael. Mitz Hashem, with these answers, we should be zocher to have the same journey. Lechol min hazvachim u min hafsochim.